Good morning and welcome to everyone. I am woman. Hear me roar. Relax. Not me personally. Although in the news recently we've been reading and hearing a lot about a very famous athlete that decided that he would rather become a she. Anyway, that's the title of an old Helen Reddy song. I looked it up online to make sure that the lyrics were something close to what I remembered. That was not a song that I related to. What surprised me was the number and types of comments that people had made about the song. Some totally loved it, were glad that Reddy had put their feelings into a song. Some totally despised it and thought it was ridiculous. Some men actually suggested it was a song that only related to ugly women, that the good-looking women never had any of these problems because they could get everything they needed in life, to including a man, to make their life happy. And of course their comments inspired some really caustic comments from some of the women who thought those types of men were old-fashioned cavemen. So are men better than women, or are women better than men? Today, in my message that I've titled The Battle of the Sexes, we'll take a look at how God would answer those questions. Now, I'm sure you know that ideas for messages can come in many different ways. The idea for this one came from a book that my wife picked up at one of the library book sales. It was titled Wild West Women, Travelers, Adventurers, and Rebels. The book was about Canadian women who, and I'll quote, lived in an era informed by Victorian expectation of what a woman should do and who she should be. Now, you can probably tell from the title of the book that the women whose stories were included in the book didn't really fulfill those expectations. The introduction of the book sets the stage for what life was supposed to be for a woman who lived during that time. And I'll quote, if a woman was married, she was expected to do as her husband bade her, to raise the children and to see to the couple's social life. If widowed or abandoned by a husband or unmarried and not supported by her family, she needed to venture from the home to make a living, then she was generally limited to teaching, nursing, or domestic service. And of course, nursing back then was more along the lines of what an aide would do today, nowhere near the responsibilities or pay that a nurse has today. In 1903, one newspaper produced an article praising the ideal woman, and I'll quote, the ideal woman who had no history and no story was plucked from school before it was too late, much schooling seemingly being the destruction of an ideal woman, loved but did not reason, and while knowing that a man could love more than one woman, loved but one man herself. Sounds like men have always been dreamers. Around 1874, a petition was presented to the government, signed by many prominent men of Victoria, Canada. And I'll quote from the petition. A woman's rights bill must not be countenanced, for it would interfere with a sacred relationship between men and women and make lovely ladies weak imitations of men. I thought just the introduction of the book summarized a lot of the difficulties that women have had to deal with for centuries. Got me thinking that for far too many men, the only way that they feel comfortable for themselves is if the little woman doesn't overstep herself. As long as he can feel that he is better than she is, all is well in his world. Legally, in the 19th century, women had almost no rights. They didn't have the right to own property. They didn't have the right to sue or serve on a jury. They didn't have the right to divorce or even to have custody of their children if she was divorced. Their education was inferior to the men and ended much earlier. Elizabeth Cady Stanton helped organize the first National Woman's Rights Conference in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848 to help women obtain some of those rights. Obviously, since women were not allowed to vote at the time, it took the help of some men who were not afraid to let women share in the rights that they already enjoyed. Mrs. Stanton was supported in her quest for women's rights by her husband, and a number of other notable men joined the cause, including Frederick Douglass, William Lloyd Garrison, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Fortunately, there were men that had confidence in themselves who were willing to acknowledge that a woman could be responsible for her own life, and that men did not have the right to prohibit them from going as far as they could. I'd like to refer to a comment that Steve Myers made in a sermon he gave on the New Testament on women. In his sermon, he stated, "Jesus didn't see a woman's existence as totally defined by her relationship to a man. Said differently, a woman should not be viewed only as someone's wife or someone's mother or someone's daughter or someone's widow. Jesus saw women as individuals who had personal access to God and could be full-fledged members of his family in his kingdom. So men, married or unmarried, I have another question. How do we see women? And a question for all of us, how does God want us to relate to one another? Let's take a look at Genesis, starting in Genesis 2, verse 7. Genesis 2, verse 7. "And the Lord formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being." So does that mean that men are basically clods? We know that when woman was created, she was taken from Adam, made from one of her ribs. We see that in verse 21. "And the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in his place. Then the rib which the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man." In verse 23, "And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man.'" Did that make her inferior because she was made second? No, Eve was specially made, especially for Adam. When God created Adam, he knew that he was not complete, so he provided him with the perfect solution, a woman to be his wife. James 1:17 tells us that God is the source of every perfect gift, so he knew just how to make the perfect woman. God could have made Eve from clay just like he did Adam, but making her from his rib ensured that they both knew that they were deeply connected and identified with each other. I read that Martin Luther had noted that God could have used a bone from a toe. Well, that would have led some people to believe that man was to rule over her. Or God could have used a bone from Adam's head, which some would have thought that Eve was to rule over him. But he used a bone from Adam's side, which indicated equality. If God created men and women equal before him, how can they be unequal in man's sight? In all the creatures that God brought to Adam for naming, Adam didn't find a companion just like him. Just like we read in the last half of verse 20, "But for Adam there was not found a helper comparable to him." So Eve was made not inferior, but to be his helper. The word comparable means complementary or supplementary. When a wife is added to her husband, the two of them together should have the entire character and range of emotions of God himself. God made man to be the leader of the family and woman to be a helper or support. The two together are a powerful team. Eve was created with personality and intelligence and the same spiritual potential as Adam. That's the same for all women. God always intended for men and women to fulfill different roles in the family and in the church, but to have the same spiritual potential to be kings and priests in his kingdom. While the plan may have been for every man to have a wife and therefore every woman to have a husband, we know that that hasn't always been the case. The numbers of women who have never had the opportunity to marry are enormous. For example, whole generations of women have been denied husbands because the men that they were supposed to marry, could have married, weren't there because they never came back from war. Huge imbalances in the male-female ratio are not uncommon. The important thing for all of us is that married or unmarried, men or women are to be growing in many of the same ways as they prepare to be the bride of Christ. I'd like to take some time to look at a familiar proverb, Proverbs 31. Has often been described as, often been quoted as describing the ideal woman, even as a metaphor for the bride of Christ. Just considering for our purposes, we're talking about the ideal physical woman, I think we can notice a number of things that can be a benefit to all of us, especially us men. And while this is talking about a woman who is a wife, the spiritual applications apply to all women, married or unmarried. So let's look at Proverbs 31 and remind ourselves the advice that's being given is the advice of a mother to her son. Verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance of which his mother taught him. Verse 3, do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroy kings. Now, this first piece of advice isn't for her son to avoid a woman. It's advice not to accumulate a harem, which was a custom of many ancient rulers. She was warning him that this type of behavior could lead to his destruction. Certainly the example of Solomon showed that. 700 wives and 300 concubines. Absolutely nuts. No ruler would have had time for any state business with that number of women that needed to be managed. Do you think there was peace in that household? Well, I doubt it. Although God allowed some men in the Old Testament to have several wives at the same time, that was not his intent at the beginning. How can a man and woman cleave to each other when there's more than one other? Spiritually, how can we prepare to be the bride of Christ if we're not faithful to him only? Likewise, the advice continues in verses 4 and 5. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all afflicted. Again, her advice assumes that as a leader, he will need to keep a clear head so he can rule justly. Whether a kingdom or in home, a man needs to make sure that he keeps his drinking under control so he doesn't forget God's laws and risk becoming abusive physically or verbally to those that he is supposed to protect. Beginning in verse 10, we can come to the more familiar part that deals with the ideal woman. What I particularly want us to consider is the fact that the Proverbs 31 wife needs a Proverbs 31 husband. Let's face it, we're all better at imagining this marvelous woman than we are at admitting that such a wonderful woman might not want to marry us. Verse 10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She's not going to spend his money frivolously, and she's going to be a supporter of everything that's done for the family. And single men and women also have a responsibility to use their money wisely and to prepare for the future. Verse 12, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. This isn't a woman, married or unmarried, who is hidden in the background somewhere and not allowed to do anything on her own initiative. And what about unmarried women? If they weren't capable of making something of themselves, who would do it for them? Nowadays, all of us need to be prepared to stand on our own two feet, like it or not. Verse 14, she is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Today, the food that she brings from afar may only be as far away as Trader Joe's, but she does the best with what she can. Verse 15, she rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. In verse 27, she watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. This wonderful woman is not afraid of work. Maybe the items she seeks are found on Craigslist or in a local thrift shop. She's not afraid to buy them, even if it might take a little repair work. She takes care of her family and makes sure that they get off to a good start each day. Now we're going to get into some touchy areas where a man has to stay out of the way and trust her ability to do what she set out to do. Verse 16. She considers a field and buys it. From her profits she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. Now you might want to put a marker there. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 7, verse 24. It's discussing the descendants of Ephraim. 1 Chronicles 7, 24. Ephraim had a daughter named Sherah. She built the towns of Upper and Lower Beth Horzan and Uzshirah. Now, I doubt that she physically built these towns, meaning all herself, but she undoubtedly oversaw the workmen that did build these two towns. Men, would you let your wife have this much autonomy? Would you try to encourage her to try her hand at something without you being involved? Are you single men afraid of a single woman who has already had a successful career on her own and has shown her commitment to God's way? Perhaps it would be good to consider what an asset she would be to you if she recognized you could be an asset to her. Back to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31:18. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hand to the distaff and her hand holds a spindle. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. If your wife decided to start her own business and work diligently at it, would you be able to support her? Would you be jealous if she became more successful than you and started bringing in a higher income? We don't need to turn there, but in Acts 16, we see the example of a woman like Lydia, that women are quite competent. It shows that a woman does not need a husband to be successful, but if she does have a husband, he needs to be supportive and allow her to be successful. And if a woman has a man behind her that allows her to be successful, to make the most of themselves, they can do very well. It's not the ideal situation for a woman to be alone. But no woman wants to be married to a man who doesn't give her credit for having some abilities. God expects us to work together in everything that we do. Verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hand to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. When your wife has provided well for you and the rest of the family, do you have a problem with her independently helping others? Or does everything that she does have to be run by you first? In other words, men, are we capable of being a Proverbs 31 husband? Or are we more of a my way or the highway kind of guy? Verse 28 tells us that not only do this woman's children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. One of the resources that I looked at was our doctrinal study papers on the biblical role of women. Summing up Proverbs 31, it included these comments. Her primary focus is an unwavering devotion to her husband and her family. All the marvelous attributes ascribed to her relate to the fulfillment of her role as wife and mother. She is clearly fully supportive of her husband's position as a family provider and leader by the insertion of the statement, "Her husband is known in the gates." The entire section of Scripture emphasizes her contribution to the quality of life enjoyed by her family and household. The woman in this chapter sows for her family, pays close attention to the quality and wholesomeness of the food they eat, and generates some additional income that serves to enhance their standard of living and quality of life. Her efforts in this regard appear to be carried out from the home or family setting. Her contribution to the household certainly doesn't match what Aristotle thought. According to Aristotle, the labor of women added no value. I'll quote what he said. "The art of household management is not identical with the art of getting wealth, for the one uses the material which the other provides." And sadly, as recently as 1979, our Justice Department, a task force, took a whack at defining the value of household, of housework. Again, this is as recently as 1979. That Justice Department task force stated, "The home production that is a woman's primary responsibility is obviously not work. Since no money is paid for the services, it is not only not work, it is valueless." 1979. Fortunately, that same year, a young attorney named Michael Minton successfully argued that a housewife was worth more than $40,000 a year. Just taking inflation, that would be more than $60,000 now. I guess Aristotle would be surprised to learn just how much a woman does contribute to a household's financial success, whether she works outside the home or is a stay-at-home mom. While many of us feel that we are far short of being a Proverbs 31 wife or husband, what is God really looking for? Returning to Genesis, we can get more understanding of God's attitude toward both men and women and their proper relationship. Genesis 1, verse 26. "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness." The word for man is better translated as mankind in this verse. By this we can see that both Adam and Eve, and consequently all men and women, were made in God's image. And verse 27 confirms this understanding. So God created man in his own image, and in the image of God created him. Male and female he created them. It wasn't just the man that bore the image of Christ, of God. Verse 28. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." God intended for them to work as a team. As we saw earlier, when God created Eve, she was to be Adam's helper. Quoting from the study paper again, the detailed account of man's creation in Genesis 2, verses 18 to 25, refers to Eve as a helper. The context shows that Eve's role was supportive of Adam's, and that his was the leadership role. While God intended the husband to be the leader in the marriage, a support role in no way implies or suggests inferiority, as is borne out by the fact that both male and female were made in the image of God. The Genesis text further describes Eve as comparable to Adam. The Hebrew word specifically means a counterpart. In other words, she would offer an added dimension of complementary qualities that Adam lacked. The last point's extremely important. We've all heard the statement, behind every good man, there's a woman. I'm absolutely convinced of the truth of this. It's a rare man that can go far if he doesn't take his wife's suggestions, seek her opinion, and generally recognize that there are things that she gets that he doesn't. Rudyard Kipling stated, "A woman's guess is much more accurate than a man's certainty." This can often be the case. When a man recognizes the unique traits that a woman has, he can succeed much better than if he tries to go it alone. If we look back at Proverbs 31, verse 23, we read, Proverbs 31, verse 23, "Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land." This implies that some of the recognition he receives is in part because of her. There's an old joke about how to be healthy that tells us we need to make sure we select good parents. Well, obviously that's impossible. But it is possible to help yourself be a woman that can fulfill all these qualities if. Probably the most important thing that a woman can do is to make sure she marries a man who she can respect and who respects her. It can be very hard for a woman to submit to a man if she doesn't respect him. She can be smarter than he is. She can earn more money than he does. If he makes wise decisions and leads his family well, she has no problem with either of those facts. But if a woman doesn't respect her husband, her marriage could be miserable, and so would his. Now, if a man has married someone that's smarter than he is and earns more money than he does, he's actually made at least one good decision. The question will be whether he grows resentful of her success, or he tries to bring himself up by bringing her down. Unfortunately, that can happen too often. Hopefully not within the church. I'm talking about society in general. The time for couples to seriously consider whether they can love and respect each other should come before they marry. None of us are perfect. We may have made a choice to respect our mate for the strengths and positive traits that they have, and not focus on the faults that they have. We need to make sure that we can support the relationship rather than weaken it or possibly destroy it. I'm sure some of us have heard the name of Gary Smalley, who writes on marriage and family relationships. Back in 1997, Gerald Ost interviewed him for the Good News magazine. He mentioned a number of things that every man and woman needs in a marriage. I'd like to mention the first two. First, women need to feel secure and know that they are highly treasured. Second, a wife needs meaningful communication. The husband should not just try to fix what he sees as her problem. He must simply try to understand her needs. We men can have a tendency to want to solve problems, even when all our wife needs is a sympathetic ear. It's hard not to immediately start telling her what to do, but that can be dangerous. More than likely, she knows what needs to be done. She just wants to talk about it first, maybe several times, maybe to her 10 closest friends. Meanwhile, the most important thing that we can do is nothing. Unless she specifically asks, "What should I do?" then you might want to just look interested and still say nothing. As a man, we want to do all these big things to show that we're the man. And yet it can often be little things that builds us up in the eyes of our wives. Do we pick up our own laundry and put it in a hamper? Now, ladies, I'm not going to bring myself to ask whether or not we help wash the laundry. You don't want to see all the clothes come out gray or pink. Do we leave her things alone? Our wives don't like it if we use her good scissors to try to cut a piece of carpet. Getting back to the Gary Smalley interview, he notes that men's needs are different. Men hate turmoil in their marriages, even though they sometimes provoke arguments. They need rules to live by, so they often create rules in marriage. Women are usually more aware of things in a relationship than the men are. They think we are as aware as they are of their needs, which is why it hurts their feelings so much when they find out that we're not. In the May-June 1997 issue of The Good News, there was a little sidebar that asked the question, "Will your marriage survive?" It begins with, "Some marriage counselors claim that couples should learn to fight fairly and not worry about their tendency to argue. This conventional wisdom is now proving to be not so wise after all. A recent study of 691 couples indicated that the more partners argue, regardless of their style of quarreling, the more likely they will eventually divorce. Their point? Conflicts beget distress, and eventually an argument can prove to be the straw that breaks the camel's back." As mentioned above, men hate turmoil in their marriages, even though they sometimes provoke arguments. Does this mean that the woman needs to just learn to deal with it and learn to live with things that bother her so she doesn't upset her husband? Well, of course not. But ladies, you may need to remember what Gary Smalley said about men not being aware of your needs. Help us out a little bit. We can be so glad just to get home from work, have dinner, and then take some time to relax in the evening that we don't think enough about you. It's not that we don't love you. It's not that we're taking you for granted. It's just that sometimes we can be clueless. We can assume that we're doing the right thing when we aren't. We may be doing a nice thing, but it's not the needed thing. One simple example. Yes, night can be hectic when the dishes need to be cleaned up and the children need to be gotten to bed. A man might be patting himself on the back for being such a good husband, saying, "I'll take care of the dishes." Meanwhile, his wife might be craving some time alone, even if she has to do the dishes to get it. In this case, the best thing that we could do is ask, would you rather me take care of the dishes or the kids tonight? Is it possible for a woman today to be anything like the Proverbs 31 woman? Probably, but it doesn't happen overnight. When a woman marries, she doesn't instantly know how to manage a home, let alone all the things that this woman was being praised for. I imagine a lot of women can remember the first time they fixed a complete meal for company. You may not have gotten everything finished at the same time. It takes time to learn how to get different kinds of dishes to come out at the same time. Holly and I remember visiting a family shortly after we first married, and apparently this is something that the lady had never learned. As something was finished cooking, the lady would set it on the table. When the next item was ready, she set it on the table. And I'm not talking about someone that only had a hot plate. All the burners on her stove worked, and so did the oven. Anyway, finally when we sat down to eat, well, personally, I'm not real fond of cold mashed potatoes or cold gravy. A lot of the traits found in the Proverbs 31 woman and her husband, actually in any of us, married or not, are developed by doing the same thing, and that is putting God first. If you start the day with prayer and Bible study and set your goals properly, you're on your way. Doing this will help us clarify our priorities. To consistently make wise decisions, we need to make sure we're getting the wisdom that we can from God. Bible study is a must. Time management is a must. We need to strive to be diligent and hardworking. We need to strive to attain moral excellence so that what we do is right, even if no one is looking. While a Proverbs 31 woman could today be considered a smart shopper or bargain hunter, as so many things in running a household, it can be much smoother if both husband and wife are involved. There should be a financial plan that you both are following so that impulse buying doesn't happen. Our lives are full of choices, and wisdom can help us make better ones. Singles have to make wise choices too. Just because we don't have anyone to be responsible for except ourselves, God expects us to spend our income and our time wisely. A Proverbs 31 husband will allow his wife to have her own opinion and express it. He will be proud of his wife's accomplishments, not jealous or resentful. Again, here it's important to make sure that you choose the right person when you marry. Personal example, both my wife and I hate to travel, so we have no problem deciding where we're going to go for the feast. But what if she loved to travel? She'd be unhappy going to Jekyll each year, and I'd be miserable being dragged off to some place out of the country. There's some things that are hard and can be hard to compromise on, so it's better not to need to. Mario Sigley wrote an article for Vertical Thought that was reprinted in the January-February 2013 Good News. It was entitled Men and Women of Steel and Velvet. He was addressing the big question for men and women: when to be like steel and when to show velvet. He gave the example of Abraham, who showed his velvet side in Genesis 13. You may remember this is when Abram, as he was called then, gave his nephew Lot the right to choose where he would dwell, since they could no longer dwell together because of the number of animals they had. Genesis 13, verse 8. So Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, for we are brethren. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan and journeyed east. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Now this land was a lot more arid and mountainous, so it was a sacrifice for Abram. Later we can see his steely side. Genesis 14, verse 14. Now when Abram heard that his brother, nephew actually, was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants and went in pursuit. So he brought back all the goods, and he also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the woman and people. What about Esther? She showed her velvet side by humbly accepting advice from the palace eunuch. She displayed grace and modest beauty that won the king's hearts. But her inner steel came into play when she first had to align herself with her people. Then she had to courageously approach her husband and work things out so her people were saved and that the enemies were the ones that were defeated. And of course, the greatest example of a man of steel and velvet was Christ himself. His care and concern for those that were suffering was amazing. On the other hand, when we read about him dealing with the money changers in the temple, we're looking at a man of steel. Can we each learn when to be soft and yielding, and when to be strong and solid? With practice and with submitting our will to God, we can. With learning to esteem others better than ourselves, as we're told in Philippians 2, verse 3, we can. Now, that's not a scripture that we're only supposed to use when dealing with others in the church, at work, or in our neighborhoods. That's a prescription for a happy marriage and for good relationship between the church, whether we're married or single. One thing about the Proverbs 31 woman is that her appearance was never mentioned. Her character is the important thing. How many men ignore the fact that there are things about a woman that just don't set right because she's so attractive? He just can't get by the looks. Well, we have a little trivet in our home. Kissing don't last, cooking do. Looks eventually fade. Gravity starts to be our enemy. All of us need to be praying that we're growing lovelier on insight and that our spouse's eyesight is failing. We should have the happiest marriages in the world. We understand the spiritual reasons for marriage and have more understanding of the role of men and women. Men and women do have different types of personalities. We have different strengths and weaknesses. As such, we need to learn to work together rather than letting our differences separate us and play into Satan's hands. God wants us, all of us, male and female, to make it into his kingdom. What can a man or woman do to help each other reach their potential? I'm going to mention two ways, but there are, of course, many others. First of all, put God first. Married or unmarried, this is where it starts for all of us. While a husband and wife can give each other a hand on our journey into the kingdom, ultimately, each of us will stand before God on our own. We will be judged on our own merits. First Peter 3, verse 7 reminds us, husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. It's not only us men that God's calling. If we're not encouraging and supporting our wives and all women, could we be hindering our relationship with God? And a second point, we need to love and respect each other. One way to practice love and respect for your wife is to allow her not only to share in how the family's money is spent, but also allow her to have some of her own money to use as she wishes. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, Paul tells Timothy, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Worse than an unbeliever. If finances are tight, both the husband and wife need to sacrifice, not just the wife and the children. And if you are married, help your wife be prepared to carry on in the event of your death, especially while the children are young. She should be encouraged to know how to deal with family finances. She should have her own credit card and checking account so that she can be establishing credit in her own name. If you're a single woman, you need to make sure that your finances are in order and you've made arrangements for someone to be your power of attorney or healthcare surrogate if the need ever arises. Eve wasn't given to Adam to be his slave or subordinate, even though she was to submit to him. In any marriage, we have to learn to work together and show respect and love to each other. That approach follows familiar biblical principles that we can look at in Ephesians 5. Now, yes, they can be some of men's favorite verses. The wife is to submit, not because she's inferior, but because there can only be one head. What we need to remember is that we're different, but we can benefit from our differences so we can both be stronger in the long run. Men can be more analytical. Yes, facts can be more measurable. And some men have the tendency to trust only what he sees. Women can be more intuitive. Ministers, all men can be far better counselors because of their wives. A woman brings feminine insight, and they're often better at analyzing people. They can help bring a focus on people rather than objects and feelings, rather than actions. Combining our strengths when an important decision needs to be made can lead to making a better decision. In the January-February 1999 issue of The Good News, there's some interesting data that came from a study done by researchers at Carnegie Mellon University. They found that their information that they found put some common assumptions to the test about sex differences in communication. In comparing the effects of male-male, female-female, and male-female discussions, they found that people listened better to others of their own sex, but noted that more emotional support was provided during opposite sex interactions than during same sex interactions. In establishing marriage as a male-female relationship, God gave humanity the best foundation for emotional support. As with so many things, what started out as a desire for women not to be treated as the personal property of men has led to consequences far beyond what Elizabeth Cady Stanton or Susan B. Anthony were looking for. The feminist movement has basically wanted to eliminate all traces of male dominance within the family. Or if there was to be a man in the house, the idea was to make sure he was the ideal match. And, of course, that could be determined by living together before marriage. Except it doesn't work that way. After decades of rejecting the traditional marriage relationship, the results have not been what was hoped for or expected. Rather than providing the benefits of marriage without the so-called problems, cohabitation brings problems without the benefits of a good marriage. In a national survey of married couples and unmarried couples living together, men in an unmarried relationship scored lower on commitment than anyone else in the survey. And it's not only there's less physical commitment without being married, there's less emotional commitment. But is it any surprise to us that when we ignore biblical-based roles for husbands and wives, that it doesn't work? Marriage involves commitment, self-sacrifice, and a willingness to share. It pictures faithfulness and permanence. These are things that we all need to be learning. Why do we refuse to acknowledge that God knows what's best for us? Marriage, if at all possible, a solid respect for one another, support for one another, caring for one another more than for yourself. God is the ultimate authority on marriage. He knows that it takes a certain level of sacrifice. Sacrifice and service from both the man and the woman. But he also knows that there's a divine purpose in marriage. And if we understand that purpose and commit to it, it can put the petty differences that are common in all marriage, into perspective. In the November-December 2003 Good News, there's a sidebar titled "The Ultimate Goal of the Marriage Union." The marriage union has an ultimate purpose that few understand. The Apostle Paul gave us a glimpse of this truth when he wrote, "For this reason shall a man leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, that the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church." In Revelation 19, verses 7 to 9, Christ reveals that in the future, at his return on earth, he will marry the church, the believers who have been faithful to him and his word. Today's physical marital union depicts tomorrow's greater spiritual union between Christ and his church. Some Christians are now preparing for and actively part of that future permanent union. The spiritual growth of a Christian is the very process of proving ourselves ready for the ultimate goal of marriage to Christ, to be one with him, resurrected to spirit as he is spirit. The church of God is now betrothed to Christ, which means the church is promised to him as a virgin bride. Since human beings cannot make themselves pure, we are made clean by Jesus' sacrifice and saved by his life. However, with God's assistance through his Holy Spirit, we are still required to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. So what about those who have never married or who are not presently married? Whether one remains married or remains single, God wants us to understand that there are spiritual implications to the marriage relationship. Physically married or unmarried, the requirements are the same. And that is, we are to be preparing now to marry Christ at his return. And what will Christ be looking for in his bride? First and foremost, the same things that we look for in a mate. Someone who will be faithful. Time and again, we read that Israel was not faithful. Eventually, God had to set her aside. God is not going to marry a bride who is not totally faithful and committed to him and his way. He doesn't want us to go off making friends with the world, basically committing spiritual adultery. He's looking for someone faithful in everything they do, whose life is committed to his way, keeping the Sabbath, the holy days, tithing, obeying the law. Someone who is faithful in doctrine, in handling the small responsibilities that we've been given now, running our homes, building loving relationships, and keeping God first and foremost in our hearts. We need to remain faithful to God, his law, his way of life, his approach, and his values. God is also looking for a mate with character. For starters, Philippians 2, verse 25, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. That tells us we need to have the mind of Christ. That's where our godly character is going to start. Having this kind of mind does not happen overnight. It's an approach that takes us time to internalize. The fruits of the Spirit are all characteristics of God that we need to be developing. And these too take time to grow in us. We are ultimately to have the very nature and character of God. We can start now by learning to discern right from wrong. We can start now by taking the law of God and applying it in our lives and everything that we are faced with. One day we'll be assisting Christ as salvation is offered to the entire world. Christ would not have a wife that does not support him and is not faithful to him. So yes, the ideal might be for a man and woman to marry, since they can probably learn some of the spiritual concepts faster by needing to submit to each other. But the responsibility for us to prepare to be the bride of Christ rests on all of us, married or single. Men, women, married or single, being faithful and having strong character are among the things God is looking for in his bride. And where do we learn how to be the future wife he will marry? Not only through marriage now, but in how we conduct our day-to-day lives. Hopefully the same way that Christ did when he walked on this earth. Christ won't marry a child. We need to make sure that we've grown up and matured so that we're ready to marry Christ. In conclusion, let's look at Revelation 19. Revelation 19, starting in verse 7. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. Then he said to me, write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. We have been called to be the very bride of Christ. Now is our time to grow and mature and make ourselves ready for Christ when he returns. God looks at each of us as the future bride of his Son. And everything that we go through now is part of what he's doing to prepare us to become that bride. So, are men better than women? Or are women better than men? Well, God doesn't look at us that way. He made us both in his image and has plans for all of us in his kingdom. It doesn't matter whether we're male or female, married or single, there is no battle of the sexes.